Good morning, everyone. We are working with a treatise on white magic, video commentaries, and we're on commentary number 48, and this is the fifth rule. And this fifth rule, well, so far we've done 12 programs, and this is the 13th. Perhaps it will be the last of the rules, of the programs on this fifth rule. We'll see. We've been looking at a ninefold sequence that involves eventually the awakening of the centers and what has to occur in order for these centers finally to be awakened by the Kundalini. So the first is character building, then followed by right motive, and followed by service. This much we have done so far, and now we're going to take up meditation, the technical study and science of the centers, and breathing exercises. We'll see how far we get in this process. But we can see that what is very important is that the would-be white magician does not jump right in and start to awaken the centers without the necessary purification on the path of probation, and without being sure of the vision, the motive, which is inspiring this type of work. And, you know, the simple question of, as he says, is it vice or is it virtue? And we've discussed that. Now, with respect to service, there's been a lot done and written and discussed on what service really is. But let's just say that as we serve, right motive and service really go together. And I think I'll, you know, simply say that right motive and service are paralleling processes. And now we reach meditation. Now, throughout the book, there have been so much mention and discussion of these factors, and it would continue to be the case long after this book has been written. But the second book to be published was Letters on Occult Meditation, and so the theme of meditation has been foundational from the first, and the three factors which sustain the work of any developing disciple are meditation, study, and service. And this is whether one wants to be a white magician, which every truly advanced disciple becomes when he enters the hierarchy, whether his ray happens to be the seventh or the third or not. He does become the white magician and has to abide by the idea of meditation, study, and service. I think when we get into the great beings, such as, let's say, the planetary logoi, they have their own type of meditation and their own type of studying the much wider universe in which they play just a tiny part. And of course, their service is to the lives who live and move and have their being within them, and also to the other planetary logoi within any system, as they do offer something of value in solar systemic group work. Sometimes they're called cosmic beings as well. Maybe we can call it cosmic group work. So the parallels do continue. Now, I don't know how much he's going to really say about meditation here, because so much has already been said. Upon this matter, we will not enlarge, he says, as it has formed the basis of much of the teaching in my other books, and many of you are working steadily upon the work of meditation. I have placed it fourth upon the list. And that's interesting, of course. You know, sometimes service is considered of still greater value than meditation. It may be a surprise to some, but he has mentioned this more than once, or will in the course of his writings. I have placed it fourth upon the list, for meditation is dangerous and unprofitable to the man who enters upon it without the basis of a good character and clean living. All right. So we want to have that in mind, because we can arouse all kinds of unwholesome possibilities through meditation, and unless there is the general cleaning out and testing of motive and character before entering into meditation, who knows how it will be used. Those who are against the divine plan, who work as the counterforce, also engage in meditation, but it is for ends and objectives which stop the manifestation of what we might call the good, the divine plan, the divine purpose. So meditation would then become only a medium for bringing the in of the energies which but serve to stimulate undesirable aspects of his life. Just as the fertilizing of a garden full of weeds will produce a stupendous crop of them, and so crush out the weak and tiny flowers. Well, that's very clear, isn't it? Energy is neutral, and if we bring in a great deal of energy without having cleared away the germs of unwholesome negative possibilities, we will be in for a major confrontation with those forms of life which finally destroy the good, symbolized here by the weak and tiny flowers. So I guess any gardener knows that we have to get rid of the weeds. I remember when I was a little boy, I used to like to it's not the weed whacker, it was sort of a metal instrument whereby when you found the weeds, you could cut them out at the root. And this was the task that was given to me. Maybe it was a promise of things to come. Okay, meditation is dangerous where there is wrong motive, such as desire for personal growth and spiritual powers. So anything that pertains to the exaltation of the person per se, without feeding the group purpose, the higher group purpose, expressing ideally the good, the beautiful, and the true, will be considered dangerous. For it produces, under these conditions, only a strengthening of the shadows in the veil of illusion, and brings to full growth the serpent of pride lurking in the valley of selfish desire. Well, here he is speaking in pictorial language, but we all understand the meaning. This pictorial language is clear. Obviously, we have pride and cruelty are heads of the Hydra, which we have to do away with, and they are difficult to rid ourselves of. Okay. Pride, separativeness, and cruelty. These are the mental heads. The mental heads of the Hydra. And the meditating person can become very aware mentally, very powerful mentally. As a matter of fact, the members of the Black Lodge, we are told, are extraordinarily powerful in terms of their mental development, their lower mental development, and have taken the concrete mind to heights, to extents, to ranges of development which we cannot even conceive. So it's all out of balance and selfishly motivated, and may become a sphere unto itself, a great disaster, making of the concrete mind a kind of 13th sphere in the table of hierarchies. And I'm sure that has relationship to the 8th sphere as well. So meditation, he really is repeating this, isn't he? Meditation is dangerous when the desire to serve is lacking. Mostly with these other types, it's the desire to take, the desire to deprive. It's a kind of a, for the Black Lodge, it is meditation as a kind of vampirism. We might say stealing energy and qualities from others. Service is another word for the utilization of soul force for the good of the group. There are many definitions of service, and it's worthwhile examining the various compilations that have been made, because, and this would be the topical study that Master DK is speaking of, and which he strongly encourages in us, and in which I have begun to do somewhat when dealing with the initiations, taking the compilations on the initiations and going through them. You learn something different when you can immediately cross-reference what has been said in the various books with each other. So service is another word for the utilization of soul force for the good of the group. Now, soul force can be, as we know, selfishly appropriated. And even though it is soul force, it can be used for the exaltation of the individual and basically encouraging a separative attitude. We might say an anti-social attitude. Remember that the hierarchy is the society of organized and illumined minds, where this impulse for the good of the group is lacking. Man may, energy may pour into the bodies, but lacking use and finding no outlet will tend to stimulate the centers and produce conditions disastrous to the neophyte. Overstimulate the centers, producing conditions disastrous to the neophyte. The Black Lodge, I think I'll put it that way. BLL works, in fact, we are told, interestingly, through the overstimulation of the centers. Okay, now, what have I done? Okay. I'm not especially sleepy, but it is the morning work. The Black Lodge works through the over stimulation of the centers and through the loss of control of the individual. Or let's just say encouraging the loss of control by the individual. Assimilation and elimination are laws of soul life as well as of physical life. And when this simple law is disregarded, serious consequences will follow, as inevitably as in the physical body. So two types of difficulty are discussed. DFCT difference. All right, I'm getting a little stubborn here this morning. I'm sorry. I really want to know how I have put the word difficulty into an abbreviation. And that is a difficulty. DF CL. DFCY. Let's try that. Let's try that. DFCY difficulty. Okay. So two types of difficulty arise. One is the lack of preparation for stimulation. The other is no outlet for the incoming energies and thus over stimulation. Now, the man may not be selfishly oriented, especially, but if he invites the downpouring of energy and has no way to really express it, then the problems arise of congestion, overstimulation, lack of balance, the interference of the centers with each other, the burning of the etheric webs, the letting in of the lower levels of the astral plane, even obsession, possession. All of these things can be the result of handling energy improperly. All right. Well, he didn't say so much about it, but about meditation as one of the means of preparing for the awakening of the centers. But warnings, let's say, have been given. Warnings have been given. Now, the next phase before, let's say, jumping in and doing things before one knows what one is doing, you know, give me a wand and let me start waving it, as it were. We have to study the centers, and this we are now beginning, he tells us. It is a study as yet in its infancy in the West and little applied in the East. So here's all of this knowledge, which is not reaching us here in the Western civilizations. But of course, this was written, you know, maybe 90 years ago, or 80 something years ago anyway. And in the East they have it, but do they use it? Our approach will be somewhat new, for though we will accustom ourselves to the names, locations, and relationships of the centers, we shall do no meditation work upon them. To some of his groups, he gave a little bit of meditation work on the centers. If we look at meditation number 3 in Discipleship in the New Age, we will see that the centers are involved, and also meditation number 2, the centers are involved. But it's not rigorous or manipulative work. It's simply some imaginative linking work, which apparently can be done without danger. Eventually, we shall arrive at an appreciation of their vibration, of their tone and colors, and of the astrological influences. This is very interesting, because each one of them is a little world unto itself. And let's say, like any planet or little world, has its own vibration, tone, its musical aspects, its colors, and its associated planets and even signs of the zodiac. So these, let's see if I can do this. Okay. All right, we had a little snafu there, but so we're arriving at the appreciation of the vibration, tone, you know, vibration, tone, color, and astrological significance of the little worlds that we call the centers. And any little world or large world will have its own rate of vibration in cosmos. It will have its musical tones, its pitches, its major pitch, minor pitch, and so forth. The colors will be there, and For that which occurs within our planet and solar system, there will be planetary significances and influences, as well as zodiacal influences. So the study will reveal these things, and we will know then in a more exacting manner how to work with these centers. Okay. We shall not work with the centers down the spinal column, nor aim at their conscious utilization as does the clairvoyant and clairaudient person. All the work done by students must be done entirely in the head and from the head. Now, this is an important statement, and he is outlining the safe approaches to white magic at this stage of our development. There is the seat, there is the seat of the will, the spirit aspect working through the soul. There also is the synthetic expression of the personality, and in the understanding of the relation of the two head centers and their mutual interplay, and by that we might say astrologically, let's see, A-S-T-R-L, astrologically, the interplay between Vulcan and Venus. All right, Vulcan and Venus. Right, understanding, that's it. I think this is one of my days, folks, but please bear with me as I stumble through this. Goodness. All right. So, there is also the synthetic. There also is the synthetic expression of the personality through the Ajna Center, especially. Okay. Uh-huh. Okay, now I understand what has happened. Right. Through the Ajna Center. And in the understanding of the relation of the two head centers and their mutual interplay, will come gradually the domination of the personality by the soul. And, you know, this is, we understand the pineal and the pituitary glands are involved, and the head center and the Ajna Center. This will lead to the consequent and subsequent guided activity of the five other centers, all controlled by the two major head centers. The work in these five centers will eventually be automatic, as the present functioning of the heart and the lungs in the physical body. And right now, we're attempting to arouse them in a rather mechanical way, step by step. Eventually, all will be smooth and natural and unconscious to us. Mm-hmm. Okay. Goodness. Okay, so the presiding intelligence, the self, and we can call this the awakened, the awakened soul in incarnation, seated on the throne between the eyebrows and guided by the light in the head, will be awake to the interests of the soul, which is still on its own plane, and as alert as the eye consciousness of the average self-centered man. So we will know ourselves as something different than the lower eye. We come to know ourselves as something more and different than the than the lower I. Okay. The personality, let's call it personality I. Okay. By the rhythm of his divine life and by his conscious cooperation with the plan and functioning through the use of the will, must the disciple in incarnation act as the agent of the soul in the three worlds. Now, you know, obviously, knowing something which is true and useful about the centers is one way of doing this. So, let's just say that... has this happened again? Okay, friends, I've been having my share of difficulty this morning. I guess it's the Mars conjunct the Moon in Gemini, a sign of communication here. We are dealing with number 5, which is the study of the centers. Right. And we've reached the point where we've talked about the automaticism of the 5 centers up the spine. So this is important, and eventually they will operate automatically. The presiding intelligence, now that is the soul in incarnation when we're talking about that which is man in his personality, the self, seated on the throne between the eyebrows and guided by the revelatory light in the head, will be awake to the interests of the soul on its own plane. And I think soul on its own plane, and as alert as is the eye consciousness of the average self-centered man. So by this time, we realize we are an extension of the soul. Realize that we, in the personality, are an extension of the soul on its own plane. By the rhythm of his divine life, let's just say encouraged through regular meditation, and by his conscious cooperation with the plan and functioning through the use of the will, must the disciple in incarnation act as the agent of the soul in the three worlds. So the soul in incarnation acts as the agent of the soul on its own plane, and this within the three lower worlds. All right, that's clear enough, and sorry for the little interruptions here. We had also a malfunction of the heating system in the middle of all of this kind of thing. All right. So now let's continue with discussion of breathing exercises. First comes the study of the centers, and it would be unwise to plunge in without sufficient knowledge, attempting to follow many indications in many books which do not take into consideration adequate preparation for the use of such exercises. In fact, they may even be erroneous and wrongly stimulating exercises. Little by little, as progress is made with the needed instruction, will the needed instruction be imparted? Let me point out, however, that no breathing exercises can be safely used when there is no attempt to impose rhythm upon the life of every day. So the success of breathing exercises and the imposition of rhythm on the everyday life go hand in hand. Right, the two activities must go hand in hand. So, the effect of breathing exercises is varied. There is the oxygenation of the effect, the oxygenation of the blood. The bloodstream is purified and pressure is relieved. Now, this might be some indication, some hint about the common blood pressure problems of many disciples. Pressure is relieved. Interesting. A symbolism underlies this, for as the blood is oxygenated, so is the life of the man in the three worlds permeated by spiritual energy. So this is one of the ways, short of blood pressure pills, I think, for a reasonable type of pressure to exist. So the oxygenating effect, this is the first one, the purifying effect, and the permeation by spiritual energy. Then there is the imposition of a peculiar rhythm brought about by the particular spacing and time limit of the breaths, inhalation, retention, and exhalation. And the exhalation is often followed by a kind of impressive retention. And this will vary according to the counts. And DK has offered some counts in a few exercises that have made their way, I think, into some of the Arcane School sets and were given to some of the disciples. Point C, there is a subtle effect of prana, which is the subjective element underlying the air breathed in and out, which affects most potently the body of prana, the vital or etheric body. So this is the, we might call this the stimulation of the vital body. Students should remember that subtle effects are more powerful than the physical effects, and this is a general attitude in occultism. They produce results in two directions, on the physical body and on the etheric body. Okay. The entire vital body assumes a particular rhythm according to the breathing exercise. So the master, when assigning the appropriate exercise, knows about this and has the knowledge necessary. This, kept up for a long period of time, will have a shattering or a cohesive effect upon the physical body and devitalize or vitalize the etheric body correspondingly. So this is a potentially valuable but potentially dangerous process. Then, point D, there is the effect upon the centers, which is most effectual and which follows the trend of the aspirant's thought. And this is very important because DK has told us that we must think appropriately during the breathing exercise. If, for instance, a man thinks upon the solar plexus, that center will inevitably be vitalized and his emotional nature be strengthened. Hence the need for the student to hold the meditation steady in the head and so awaken the head center, which is the, in a way, the container of all of the lesser centers, or at least the director. The prototype of the lesser centers is found in the head. Let no one doubt the effect of breathing exercises upon the vital body. As surely as eating and drinking build or destroy the physical body and aid or hinder its right functioning, so do breathing exercises produce potent effects if rightly used over a long period, long enough period of time. But this process is sometimes seized by the ambitious personality and difficulty results. All right. Now there are three final requirements, and then we're at the end of this chapter after 13 or so programs. This last program, I think, will be a little bit abbreviated, and that's fortunate because so many things have gone wrong during it. There was no real way to, the watch failed, the program failed, the heater in the house went out, all kinds of things happened. All right, so now let's go back to this ninefoldness here and see what the, remind ourselves that is. The last three are the technique of the will, the development of the power to employ time, and the arousing of the Kundalini fire. So he's asking us then, what about these last three? And I'll just put them down here so that we can be more easily reminded. There they are. And each one of them looks like a great undertaking, a real life process, taking a number of lives, I would say. And what shall I say about the last three requirements, Master DK asks us? Nothing much, for the time is not yet ripe for their correct understanding. And notice how the master is careful about what we might be called the ripeness of time. We are told that nothing is more powerful than an idea whose time has come. But think about the attempt to offer or impose an idea whose time has not yet come. It will be ignored, it will be rebuffed, it will be distorted and adapted to conditions in the wrong way. So this sense of the not only whither the plan is leading, but the timing of the various segments of the plan, the knowledge of the times and cycles when various types of energies can be introduced, this is most important. And the high initiate, let's call him the master, possesses such knowledge that very advanced siddhi or power that we find on the third sublevel of the Atma plane, and it is called all knowledge, at least within a certain context, within the context in this case of the lower three worlds. So what shall he say about this? Not much, for the time is not yet ripe for their correct understanding. Step by step must the aspirant proceed, and his theory must not persistently run ahead of experience. Well, that is a problem, especially with some of the more advanced types of knowledge. It takes a while for the form to catch up, even if the form is properly trained. Perhaps I can give the clue to each of these three through the formulation of a simple rule of daily living. So maybe we'll have an insight here about how we can learn the technique of the will, how we can master time, how we can arouse eventually under right supervision at the right time the Kundalini fire. This will be grasped by those for whom it is intended and will not work harm to the unevolved. This rule, when followed, will bring about gently and subjectively the necessary conditions for the manifestation of the requirements. So I think he's saying that if we follow the first six requirements, let's see, RQ, Yes, requirements. Then the last three will slowly and surely develop. So, yes, here we are. Well, the first one is the learning of the technique of the will. So let's say that it is correlated with number seven. With number seven. Learn to use the will through the development of steady purpose and the organizing of the daily life so that purpose may reach fulfillment. Now, obviously, when the veil of impulsion is causing its problems and the life is chaotic, order cannot be achieved, and order in the life, organization in the life, is a correspondence to the effective working of the will. Will and order go together. The first ray and the seventh ray go together, the seventh ray being a more concrete expression of the first ray, and the seventh ray being the ray of order. So this is organize the life, basically, and bring through and manifest that which you intend through an ordered life. Now, the next one has to do with time, right? Correlated with number eight, time. And this is number seven, will. Okay. Right. Learn to do something else with time besides organize it and use it. Learn to do several things simultaneously and utilize, therefore, all the three bodies synchronously. This is interesting. I've caught myself so often saying, and I don't know whether you have or not, one thing at a time, one thing at a time. And I understand it's generally conceded that women are better multitaskers than men, but this is a calling for multitasking, efficient multitasking. Okay. Let me illustrate. When you are practicing your daily breathing exercise, keep your count with accuracy. Listen attentively for the sound that soundeth in the silence of the interludes. At the same time, think of yourself as the soul, the imposer of rhythm, and the voice that speaks. This is something which can be acquired by practice, by each of you. So, simultaneity of effective action. This will help with the mastery of time. So let each of us, now we've not been given these particular breathing exercises. Yet I think if one searches through the discipleship books, one can find something of this nature. Nevertheless, the principle is clear. Now the next one and last one, final one, is about the Kundalini, correlated with number nine, Kundalini. Discover the serpent of illusion by the help of the serpent of wisdom, and then with the sleeping serpent, then will the sleeping serpent mount upwards to the place of meeting. And the place of meeting, you know, probably there's a center discussed in a treatise on cosmic fire, which is in the torso, and it has to do with the mental polarization or mental focus at least. There is a final place of meeting right here in the forehead. We can't be sure which one he means, but basically, it's saying get rid of your illusions. Be wise. Let's see. Use the wisdom of the soul to be rid of your illusions, and then naturally the sleeping serpent will rise to the appropriate place. Okay. Well, all right, these are important hints, and I just want to emphasize them. Learn. Okay. And then discover. So we can ponder on these. And see if we can bring them forward to the point where they actually begin to bear fruit. We have very pictorial language, symbolic language in the last one that is offered, but obviously our soul and meditation work will increase our ability to examine the glamours and illusions in our lives, and we can rid ourselves of them and thereby clear a way for the proper rising and thus the proper stimulation by the Kundalini and its rising to the place of meeting. I suppose fires from above must meet the fires from below. Pluto must rise and meet the fires of Uranus. And the Ajna Center is the final place from which the Kundalini is directed. Well, friends, it's something of a miracle that I got through this last this last little section. There have been so many little obstacles which required going back and erasing and re-beginning and so forth, but I will continue to move on. We've begun here, I think right there, on page 204. And this has taken us now to 209. So, or at least up to the end of 208. So I'll put this in, and I will hope that you've been able to extract something from it. The indications have been clear enough for us to know what we can do and how we can develop the higher reaches of these nine indications. Six of them are fairly easy to deal with. The last three are promoted as hints. And they are very large types of developments, will, time, and the Kundalini. These are great themes, and naturally for a foundational book like this, Master DK is not going to go into all the details. So, this will be the end of A Treatise on White Magic video commentary number 48. And see if that's correct. Yeah, it is correct. And we'll be beginning a new rule. I'll be grateful for that. So this is rule 5.13. And we've gone from 204, page 204, to 208. And the next will be the beginning of a treatise on white magic video commentary number 49, and it will be 6.1, that's a relief, and we'll be beginning on page 209 and going forward. Let's see if this is a very long rule. From 209 to not long at all. So these first six rules, and we'll be ending on page 216. We'll move from 209 to 216, probably a couple of programs and maybe three. We'll complete our studies of the rules for magic on the mental plane. And I am impressed by the idea that DK is really not repeating himself here. He's given us these rules in A Treatise on White Magic, and I wrote out some commentary on that, which is available on the Makara website. And now he is elaborating upon this and looking at the white magical process of the disciple turning himself into the true white magician and turning himself into eventually the initiate. So it's not simply a repetition. All right, I'll see if I can get all the astrological energies under control here, if possible, so that when I begin number six, things go a bit more smoothly and programs do not start disappearing on me and all my highlighting disappearing and so forth. I suppose there are these various days, and one must learn to adapt to them. Thank you for being here, and we will go on with number 49, Rule 6, and the first program in Rule 6. Bye-bye.